WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 12th of May, 2019. This morning, I'm going to follow up my show from a couple weeks ago, where I played yours truly, Johnny Dollar, with a double billing of Westerns. Up first, I'm going to have a Six Shooter, a Grand Hour fan club favorite, starring, of course, James Stewart. This is episode 30, called Johnny Springer, the original air date, the 22nd of April, 1954. This is Arthur. Thanks for listening.
You'll hear James Stewart as the Six Shooter, just one of many fine programs brought to you each week on NBC. Tomorrow night, there's top comedy entertainment with the Bob Hope Show, the Phil Harris, Alice Faye Show, and Can You Top This with Senator Ford. Bob Hope delivers rapid-fire comedy routines, while Phil Harris and Alice Faye bring both mirth and music. It's a great Friday night lineup of comedy programs, all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel, rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still remembered legends.
Didn't look like I was going to get much sleep that night. The Prospect Hotel was right in the middle of town, and from my room, I could hear just about everything went on outside. And there wasn't much I could do about the noise, either. It was too doggone hot to shut the window. The sun had been down for a couple hours, but there wasn't any breeze, and my room being on the second floor, well, the heat just seemed to sort of hang there. Whew. Boy. Yeah. Along about 10 o'clock, I finally managed to doze off. I wasn't exactly sound asleep, you understand. It was just sort of in between, you might say. What the Sam Hills? For a second, I thought maybe I dreamt that shot. And then I heard somebody come running out of the front door of the hotel and jump on a horse. And by the time I got across the room to the window, whoever it was had ridden out of sight. Well, I pulled on my pants. I headed downstairs. I was the first person to reach the lobby. Sid Tucker, he was the fellow who owned the hotel. Sid was standing behind the registration desk, hanging on with both hands. Hey, what happened, Sid? He opened his mouth to give me an answer, but the words just didn't come out. And he started to teeter a little bit from side to side, and then he toppled over. And when I got around behind the desk where he was lying, I saw the pink stain across the front of his shirt. It was getting redder every second.
Anything wrong here? I thought I heard a shot.
Red?
Well, it's Sid Tucker. You better get Doc Prince, quick.
Sure.
Now, and get the sheriff, too, if you can find him, will you? I managed to carry Sid into the dining room, laid him out on the table. I figured the doc might have to do some probing for that bullet in Sid's belly. And if Sid was in a good hard surface, he'd have a little easier time handling him. By this time, everybody in the hotel was crowding around, seeing what was wrong. Sid was still breathing, but there was a kind of a raspy noise with every breath he took, and the bleeding was worse than ever. Gee whiz, he was bad off, all right, no doubt about that. Well, it was about 10 minutes before Doc Prince got there. It seemed a lot longer, of course, but it was just about that time.
Now, just go on back to bed, everybody. Go on now. There's nothing you can do here. You'd just be in my way. Please, go on now. You stick around, Britt, if you don't mind.
Why?
Well, I might need somebody to help hold him down.
Oh, sure.
Sid's going to be all right, ain't he, Doc?
Well, I haven't even had a chance to examine him yet. Oh, now, come on, folks. Outside. Please, outside. I'll let you know what his prospects are as soon as I find out myself.
I'm afraid that's not much of a bandage, Doc, but it's the best I could do under the circumstances.
Sure, Britt. Looks like the bullet may have hit a kidney. Now, I told you folks... Oh, hello, Sheriff.
Howdy, Doc. Britt.
Oh, Sam.
How is he?
Not good, Sam. Not good at all. He's lost a lot of blood, and he's hemorrhaging pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. You around when it happened, Britt?
No, I heard a shot, and I came downstairs fast as I could, but he was alone when I got here.
Stop him.
Well, I'm not going to be able to do any digging for that bullet now. It's in too deep.
Listen, it sounds like he's coming, too.
Yeah.
Doc, is it all right for me to try and talk to him?
Well, I reckon it won't make much difference one way or the other.
Now, Sid...
Got an awful pain in my belly. What?
Here, now, you just lie there easy, Sid. Don't do no moving around.
Hurts bad, Doc. Awful bad.
Yeah, now, you've been shot, Sid.
Shot?
You remember anything about it?
No, Sheriff. I'm afraid I don't. Oh, yeah, I recollect.
Yeah?
He told me to give him the box. A tin box with the money the folks asked me to keep for him.
You know who it was?
Your money, Britt. Your cash is in it. Box 50.
No, don't worry yourself about that.
Did you recognize him, Sid?
What?
The fellow who shot you. Did you get a look at him?
John Stringer.
Stringer, huh?
Must have been him. At least ways, he sure resembled that fella on the wanted posters on the wall here.
Sid?
He's not going to answer no more questions, Sam. Yeah.
You think it was Stringer, Sam?
Well, could have been. I didn't know he was in these parts, but it's a kind of hold-up murder he's pulled before.
Yeah.
Guess there's only one way to find out for certain. Let's go, Britt.
What?
Pick up his trail if we can.
Yeah, but...
You'll come with me, won't you?
Well, sure, Sam, but... You think you need me, but there are plenty of local residents and make up a posse.
I'm not taking a posse, Britt. Might be morning before I could get one together. By then, his trail would be cold. Stringer rides alone, usually. I reckon the two of us can handle him. Your horse in the stable?
Yeah.
Well?
Yeah. All right, Sam. I'll get Scar and meet you out in front, huh? I'd heard about Johnny Stringer. He'd killed his first man when he was only 14 years old, and they said he'd managed at least one more every year since. He's still young, though, 21, 22. Supposed to be a handsome boy with black curly hair and brown eyes and a little scar on the side of his neck from a gunfight somewhere near Salt Lake City. I'd never met up with him in person. As a matter of fact, this was further south than he usually strayed. That is, if it was Stringer who'd killed Sid Tucker. Well, we got our horses, Sam and I, and started looking for the trail. The fellow I'd heard ride off just after the shooting had been heading east toward the Furnace Hills, so we rode out that way. There was a lot of moon, and after milling around 15, 20 minutes, we spotted some fresh tracks along the creek at the edge of town. Of course, we still had no reason to be certain that this was the right trail. Hold on a minute, Sam. Whoa, horse car. Whoa.
What's the matter, Britt? Whoa.
Look, over there beside that cactus. What's that look like to you?
I don't see any. Oh, yeah.
Easy, boy. Easy.
That the tin box Sid was talking about?
Yeah, the kid must have shot the lock open.
Empty, huh?
Yeah.
Probably got tired carrying it.
Mm-hmm.
Hotel should have had a safe. Been telling Sid Tucker that for years.
Yeah, well, this box always served the same purpose.
Up till now.
Yeah, up till now.
Sid said he was keeping some of your money for you.
Yeah, a couple of months' pay.
That's too bad.
Oh, well, I'll get over it. Sid won't. Well, no point hanging on to this anymore, I guess.
Yeah, at least we know we're on the right track, Britt.
Yeah, that's something. All right, Scar, let's go. Well, he had an hour's head start, maybe more. And we had to take it pretty slow to be sure we wouldn't lose the trail, so it didn't seem like we had much chance of catching up to him. Not very soon, anyhow. But then, just about dawn, when the eastern sky started to show a few slivers of orange and yellow, those tracks we were following took on a different look.
Britt?
Uh-huh?
You see now? Something must have happened to his horse.
Yeah.
Feels like maybe he went lame.
Yeah, sure does, doesn't it?
See here, Britt, you see?
Oh, boy. Oh.
Must have stopped to rest for a spell.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, boy. Don't seem like it did much good, though. Horse was lamer than ever when they started up again.
He couldn't have been making very much time here on, that's for sure.
Yeah. Better keep our eyes open. Might be running into him any minute.
In the Furnace Mountains now, and the sun was coming up hot. Oh, this is going to be another scorcher, all right. You could feel everything start to warm up already. The trail we were following showed more and more signs of the horses in pretty bad shape. And the places where he'd stopped to rest were getting closer and closer together until finally we saw the fellow on the saddle had just given up trying to ride and started moving out ahead on foot. Easy, Scar, easy.
Might as well leave the horses here, Britt. You can't be much further now.
Yeah. Sam.
Hmm?
Hey, over there in the cabin on the side of the ravine there.
Uh-huh.
Know whose it is?
No, I ain't never been on this slope before.
Well, somebody's living there. From the looks of that smoke, I'd say they're cooking breakfast.
Let's close in.
We started up the side of the ravine, moving slow, keeping the rocks for cover. It wasn't until we were about 20 yards away that I noticed the barn. Sitting in front of a clump of trees across a little clearing, we swung a little to our left. If we could just get over to the barn without anybody seeing us, then we could move into the cabin itself. But we were still in a place, and we have to get past that clearing first.
He ain't spotted us, Britt.
I guess not. If he's really here.
Look at those tracks leading into the barn. It's the same horse we've been following. I'd stake my life on it.
Yeah, they do look kind of familiar.
Best thing we can do now is rush the back door to the cabin. If it's unlocked, we can be inside before he even knows what's happened. If it ain't, we'll have to shoot our way in.
All right, Sam. You're calling the turn. It was about 30, 40 feet from the barn to the cabin itself. Sam rocked back on his heels and he gave a lunge forward. He was a big man, but he sure could move plenty fast. All I could do was keep up with him. Backed
door was unlocked, all right, and we charged inside like a couple of Texas steers.
Get your hands up. Get them up quick.
Mother, the chemist.
Well, who are you?
Who are you? What are you doing here? Where'd you break in like this?
We don't mean any trouble, miss.
Then why did you come? You think to rob me, no? Well, I have nothing to steal. You have picked the wrong cavern, senor.
Yeah. Sort of looks like maybe we have.
We'll return to James Stewart as the six shooter in just a moment. Not all careless drivers have accidents, but many such careless drivers cause accidents. A woman driver who drives slowly down Main Street while doing a little window shopping is a menace. So is the man who insists on telling the people in the back seat of his car about his poker game last week. It's no wonder that ordinarily cautious drivers start to lose their tempers and take dangerous chances to pass these careless drivers. When an accident results, the person who caused the accident probably won't even be touched. So the National Safety Council says if you want to window shop, get out and walk. If you are too busy describing one of your sterling feats to pay any attention to traffic, get out and walk. The driver's license you have does not give you the right to endanger the lives of your passengers or other human beings. Driving can be dangerous. Keep your mind on what you're doing or walk. Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter. Starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Well, she was a real pretty girl. About 20, jet black hair and black eyes that sort of flash sparks when she talked. At least they were flashing sparks at us for a while. But finally we managed to get her quieted down. We explained that we weren't trying to rob her. We were just looking for an outlaw who was somewhere in these parts.
No. No. I have seen no one.
You're sure about that?
Jay, there has been nobody. Last night, last week, nobody.
You live here all alone?
This cabin belonged to my father, Alfredo Mendez. He's dead now. 6 months. I live alone.
I must be kind of lonely, a young girl like you.
I'm busy. I take care of cows. I plant seeds. There will be food for winter.
Yeah. Well, I think I'll take a look around outside. The barn, maybe.
Well, you look there. I tell you, there's no one.
Yeah, that's what you told us.
Mm-hmm. Want me to go with you, Sam?
No. You might check the rest of the cabin, though, Britt.
Sure.
You think I lie? You think I would protect this bandido you tell me about? I am Maria Gonzalez Mendez. I do not lie.
All right. Now, don't get excited, Maria. If he should be in this neighborhood and you didn't know about it, well, it'd be for your own good if we turned him up, wouldn't it?
Si, I guess so. But your friend, he does not trust me.
Well, Sam's a sheriff. He can't afford to take chances. You mind showing me the rest of the place here?
If you like. This is the men room. You call it the parlor.
Uh-huh.
Here is where I sleep.
What's that door over there?
The bedroom of my father.
Oh, okay.
It is still as it was when he...
Yeah.
You're satisfied?
I'm satisfied Stringer isn't in the cabin, Maria.
Mm. You're like your friend. You do not trust me either. Why would I hide this man if he's what you say he is?
I sure don't know.
He killed someone last night?
That's right.
You did not see him do it.
Mm-hmm. No, but the man he shot, well, he recognized Stringer.
Stringer? It is a funny name.
Yeah?
I never heard of him.
Well, he's pretty well known. This isn't his only killing by a whole lot.
Mm. Has nothing to do with me.
Well, he's not in here, Sam.
Yeah. Well, he's not in the barn either. But his horse is.
What?
No, senor, no. It is my horse, the one you saw.
I suppose you've been riding him all night, huh?
I do not know what you mean.
Well, somebody sure have been giving him a workout. They even rode him after he went lame, too. Now, why don't you start telling us the truth for a change? How about it?
It does not matter. He has gone. I get to him another pony and he rides away. Long before you get here, he is gone.
Well, now I'll be...
You will never catch him now. That is why I pretend I think you want to rob me when you come.
Minor no.
But he has killed no one. And his name, it is no Stringer. It is Johnny Davis. He tells me that you will look for him and that you will blame him for things he does not do.
Sure, that's what he told you, and you had to believe him, didn't you?
He would not lie to me.
Well, I guess you ain't the first senorita who got taken in by Johnny Stringer. Even his wife. He's talked her into putting up with him on and off for the last 5 years, and she's supposed to be a pretty decent girl.
His wife?
That's right, Maria. Johnny's married. Has been since he was, 18 or so.
It is not my concern, this Johnny Stringer.
It isn't, huh? Your friend Davis, has he got black hair, curly black hair?
Many men have black hair.
Mm-hmm. And many men don't have a scar on their neck. Right here.
A scar?
We're just wasting time, Britt. We got a trail to pick up.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait. You lied to me about this scar. You tried to make me think that my Juanito is the same man you look for. You lie about him.
I told you the truth, Maria.
But he could not be married. No, it is not so. He's promised to marry me.
How long has Stringer been staying here?
No, senor. He's not Stringer. His name is Davis. Johnny Davis.
How long has he been here?
2 weeks. He stays in my father's room 2 weeks. I find him with a bullet in his leg. He's hurt. I make him well. He says he loves me.
Yeah.
He goes yesterday to arrange for the wedding.
He couldn't marry you, Maria. If he did, it wouldn't be a real marriage.
No, senor. No, he says he loves me. It's so I feel it in my heart. If he does not have love for me, I would know.
Britt.
Yeah?
He's got a fresh horse. We'd better get moving.
Yeah, sure. Come on.
He is the horse, senors.
What?
The man with his car. He has no horse.
Where is he, Maria?
You tried to fool me that he is married, that he has a wife. You make this up to fool me.
Where is he?
The barn.
But I already...
The loft of the barn, that is where he hides, the loft. Now I have told you the truth. You must...
Yeah?
You must tell me the truth about Johnny. There's no reason to fool me any longer. You must tell me the truth.
But it is the truth, Maria. All of it. And I'm sorry.
You ready, Britt?
Yeah, I'm ready. We walked outside. We didn't draw our guns. We just strode along as though we were going to go right past the barn. And when we got even with the door, Sam nodded and we took a couple of quick steps and pressed flat against the building.
Stringer? We know you're in there. Stringer!
Sam waited a minute or so and then we started inching toward the open door. I took my cue from him and I started moving in the opposite direction. Well, he was up there all right. And he was in a good position to cover that door, too, if either one of us so much as got near.
We ain't no hurry, Stringer. We can wait.
You wait a long time, mister.
Sam?
Yeah?
Is there any other way of getting inside? Round the back, maybe?
There's a window, but it's too small to crawl through.
Isn't that he's using up a lot of bullets?
Trouble is, we don't know how many loads he's carrying.
Yeah.
Guess we'll just have to try smoking him out. Ain't no breeze. Ought to be safe enough.
What about the horse?
He's just inside the door. He ain't tied up or nothing. He'll come out before it gets too bad.
Okay. I'll go around and back.
I managed to get to the rear of the barn by hugging the sides of the building and keep out of range. Every once in a while, I could hear Stringer get off another shot. But he was still aiming towards Sam, trying to make sure that we didn't rush him. I found some dry brush and pushed it up against the barn. And then I broke through the window with the butt of my gun. And that told Stringer where I was. He sure didn't like it. I flattened down and I stayed that way until I got a handful of brush burning. And then I raised up a couple of inches and then threw it inside. I didn't know whether it would catch or not. So I stayed there where I was so I could be sure. Yeah. We must have been lucky. It had hit some rags and papers. Anyway, a good steady stream of smoke was pouring out the broken window, and Stringer would have to start moving out pretty soon. He wasn't doing any shooting, so I made my way around the front again. The smoke would start to come out the door, and the whole inside of the barn was filled up with it. Never know about a horse during a fire. Some of them would just stand right in the middle of it and not make a move to save themselves. But there was only one direction Maria's pony could head, and that was outside, so he finally put his nose down to count and galloped past. About a minute later, Stringer followed his example. He was holding a bandana over his mouth with one hand, and the other hand was stuck up in the air. We were both covering him, Sam and me. It didn't look like we had anything to worry about. And then I saw a flicker of metal behind that bandana. But before I could do anything about it...
What is it? What is it?
She ran in front of us and threw herself in his arms.
I figured you wouldn't let me down, honey.
He pulled her tight against him, and the bandana fell away from the revolver he was holding.
All right, just drop him. I said drop him, unless you want to shoot her in the back.
Johnny.
Drop him, I said. And I ain't going to wait much longer.
Okay, Stringer.
You too, mister. Now, honey, just stay close to me. We're getting out of here.
Will you take me, Johnny?
What's the difference?
You take me to get married like you promised? Remember, Johnny, you promised me this would be our
sure,
wedding.
Sure, I remember, but we got other things to think about now. Where'd they leave their horses, Maria? Did they tell you?
I got on my mother's white dress. The dress she was wearing.
Yeah, yeah.
I pressed it nice. The lace. I look very pretty, Johnny.
Oh, shut up. What about their horses?
Why don't you tell her you won't marry her, Stringer? That you can't, even if you wanted to.
I wouldn't do a lot of talking if I was you, mister.
Tell her about your wife in Utah. And some of the other girls have helped you over a tight spot. You're not the first, Maria, not by a long shot.
I warned you, mister. I told you...
He says, why do you care, Johnny, if they are not true? But they are true. Aren't they, Johnny?
I never said they was true.
You don't have to say. I know. In my mother's white dress with the lace... I will not wear it today.
What if I am married? That doesn't mean that we can't. Maria.
For a second, I didn't realize what had happened. Stringer was staring at Maria like he'd never seen her before, and then he started to raise the revolver he was holding, his finger on the trigger, but he never finished squeezing it. He slid out of Maria's arms and fell face down on the bed. It was a small knife with a fancy silver handle buried deep in his back right between his shoulder blades.
You will want to take me with you now. Not Juanito. But I would like to change my dress first. I think I would like to wear the white one with the lace. After all.
Well, we waited around till we were sure the fire was out, and then we took Maria back to Prospect. I don't know whether what she'd done was murder or not. Stringer was holding a gun on us. Maybe she saved her lives. And he sure had it coming to him. There wasn't much doubt about that. I gave Judge Ricker a statement, and then I left Prospect. I guess if there was a trial, Maria must have... come out of it all right. At least I hope so.
The word research has become pretty familiar to all of us in the last 10 years or so. But have you ever stopped to think what research, especially medical research, means to you personally? Without research, we would have no penicillin or any of the other wonder drugs. Research is also the most important weapon in the fight against mental illness. And mental illness today afflicts more than 9 million people. Already, research has opened up leads for preventing many mental illnesses, and research has shown us speedier and more effective ways of helping mentally sick people to get well. Research scientists say we can be hopeful, but they need help from us. They need money to carry on research. If we help science, Science can give us a much better chance to escape mental illness and to cure mental illness if it should strike. If you'd like to help, give to the Mental Health Fund in care of your local postmaster. Just address Mental Health Fund in care of your local postmaster. Don't wait. This worthwhile cause needs your support now. Transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt and is written by him. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture, The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Virginia Gregg, Harry Bartell, Carly Bear, Joel Cranston, and Barney Phillips. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. Well, by the way, you'll be interested in knowing that the Six Shooter has been chosen for broadcast to our men overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Services. This is John Wall speaking.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule zero, all guns are always loaded. Rule one, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule two, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule three, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry. What we heard, first half hour of the show, was The Six Shooter, episode 30, titled Johnny Stringer. That had an original air date of the 22nd of April, 1954. Next up, we'll go to Dodge City with Marshall Dillon. This is episode 248 of Gunsmoke, titled The Devil's Hindmost. This had an original air date 6th of January, 1957. Parley Bear, who you heard, and Johnny Stringer. He actually makes an appearance in this. Not certain what character he is. That guy seemed to be all over radio in the 50s. This is Arthur, listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM. WMFO and or WMFO.org.
Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gun Smoke, starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. And the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
You know, Mr. Dillon, it's pretty doggone funny when you stop to think about it.
What is, Chester?
Life is.
No? You, been reading another book?
Well, yes, sir, I have. It's one Doc lent me. It was wrote by some fellow named Shakespeare. Did you ever hear of him, Mr. Dillon?
Shakespeare?
Yes, sir. Pretty well known in his day, I guess. He died, though, quite a while back, according to Doc.
Yeah, so I understand, Chester.
He don't use English too good. He's one of them foreigners, so it makes it kind of hard to follow him, you know. But I'll say one thing, Mr. Dillon. He sure does call the turn on the way people act.
Is that so?
Why, the things that was going on over there in Europe and all them cities in the olden days, it's just the same as what modern folks are doing here in Dodge right now.
You don't say.
Why, they were scheming and plotting and lying to one another just the same as now.
Well, then at least things aren't getting any worse, huh?
Every time a person turned around, somebody was killing somebody, seemed like. Used swords and knives, mostly.
Uh-huh.
It appears they didn't have no guns to speak of back then.
Stay out!
Wait a minute,
don't come
Chester.
Back here again unless you're sober.
Well, that's Buck Weber, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah. Come on.
Back here. I'll show you if I'll come back here, Newland.
Hello, Buck.
Marshal?
What seems to be the trouble?
No trouble, Marshal. No trouble at all.
No? If Sam Newland was to throw me out of the Long Branch, I'd call it trouble.
He didn't have no cause to.
Well, he must have thought he did. Sam's a pretty fair man, ordinarily.
I wasn't doing nothing. I just wanted to see Rancy was all.
Rancy? What's she doing in there?
She's working. What do you think a woman would be doing in there?
Your wife's working on the Long Branch?
3 days ago, she took some of her things and come into town. She said she was leaving the farm. She was leaving me. Wouldn't come back no more.
Well, Buck, you know how a woman is. She'll say a lot of things when she's mad.
Not Rancy. She ain't like that. She meant it, Marshal. And I ain't even to let her do it.
I'll give her some rope. She'll cool off in a few days, maybe.
No, with that tin-horned gambler hanging around her, she won't. I'm going back there and kill that no good.
Wait a minute, Buck. Wait a minute now. Sam told you to stay out, and from the shape you're in, I think maybe he's right.
What do you mean, the shape I'm in?
Well, you had a little too much to drink, I think. Come on, let's take a walk, huh?
I want to walk.
Take his other arm, Chester.
Yes, sir. I want to go back there and talk to the ranch.
Come on. Come on. It'll keep.
It'll keep, all right. That slick-talking gambler hanging around, filling her full of lies.
Which gambler? What do you mean?
Well, that Frisco Bates. He's been in there every night since she started. Talking soft to her. Trying to give her doubts about her rightful place in the world.
She must have had a few doubts already, Buck, or she wouldn't have left you.
Carrying on the way she is with that Frisco Bates. Everybody laughing at me. I'm going back there and kill her.
Wait, no, you're not. No, you're not. Now, come on. That's it. That's it.
Whole town talking behind my back.
Well, a funeral wouldn't give them any less to talk about, you know.
You take me to jail, Marshal?
Not just for tonight, Buck. It's the only way to keep you out of trouble.
Whose side are you on, anyhow? Mine or that no good gambler's?
Maybe neither one, Buck. There's another side to it.
Whose?
Your wife's.
Do you think you should leave politics to the politicians? Well, I'm sure some politicians would like this. But tell me, are you the sort of guy who thinks taxes are too high? Do you like the way your city is kept up? Do you think there should be more parks, perhaps a lot more sandlots for baseball or football? You say you do or don't like the foreign aid program? Well, our government was designed to give you a voice. You'd be surprised at how influential a letter or a wire is to your congressman or senator. You should protect your right to be heard by voting. As the Athenian Pericles said, we do not say that a man who takes no interest in politics minds his own business. We say he has no business here at all. Unquote. Take an interest in politics. It is your business. This is one definition in our Dictionary of Freedom.
You might be going to pass us up this evening.
That's hard to break the habit. Kitty, I understand Ramsey Weber's working here now.
That's right, Matt. She started 3 nights ago.
Is she around?
She'll be back in a minute. Right now, she's crying.
Oh?
Yeah, her husband came in drunk and mad a while ago and started abusing her.
Yeah, I know. I just locked him up for the night.
I'm glad you did, Matt. Buck Weber could be real mean if he got started.
I'm afraid he's already started, Kitty. What about this Frisco Bates?
Oh, so that's it. I told Ramsey the talk would get around.
Anything to it?
I don't think so. Not really.
Buck's got the idea there is.
Well, he's a touchy one, Matt. He's awful hard to figure.
Yeah, I know.
I hated to see Ramsey start here, but she told me she'd left him. She didn't have a cent to her name.
Uh-huh.
I thought she might be better off here than some of the other places. At least I can sort of look after her.
I'm sorry, Kitty. I shouldn't have acted like that. Oh, good evening, Marshal.
How are you, Ramsey?
Oh, if you two will excuse me, I better look after a couple of things.
Yeah, sure, Kitty.
I guess you're probably kind of surprised to find me working in a place like this.
No, I'd already heard about it. I saw your husband a little while ago.
Oh.
You sure you know what you're doing, Ramsey?
I'm sure, Marshal.
It's an easy life to get into, but it's rough to get out of.
Those farming.
And I'm afraid Buck's going to cause you trouble.
He's caused me trouble for 7 years.
Is that so?
7 years of drudgery. Make a woman a slave and work her to death. Never a decent word.
You know, some of the easy ways work out hard, too, Ramsey.
Well, I take my chances. But Buck might as well get it through his head right now. I'm not going back, not ever.
I doubt if Buck's going to see it that way.
He has to. What can he do about it?
Well, he could try to harm you, maybe, in some way.
I'll let him. It won't be the first time. There's nothing Buck likes better than hitting a woman. Unless maybe it's a young one.
Well, right now he seems to want to hit a fellow named Frisco Bates.
Oh, Mr. Bates, he's just been kind to me. That's all.
Uh-huh. You know, men like him are new to you, Ramsey. They can cause a lot of trouble sometimes. Just by being kind.
I'm not a bad woman, Marshal. At least I don't think I am. All I ask is just a little kindness and a reason to laugh once in a while. Is that too much?
Not to ask, no. Sometimes a little too much to expect, though.
Are you going to monopolize this young lady all evening, Marshal?
Oh, how are you, Frisco? Ramsey, you better go see what it was that Kitty wanted, huh?
Well, Kitty...
Yeah.
Oh, all right, Marshal. You excuse me, Mr. Bates?
Certainly. Is this a policy of the law in Dodge City, Marshal, interfering in people's personal affairs?
Sometimes, yeah. At least when their personal affairs seem to be heading toward a killing.
You mean Ramsey's husband, I suppose.
Well, he came around looking for you, didn't he?
The way he's been treating her, I may go looking for him.
Why her, Frisco? There are other women around.
Not like Ransom.
She's out of place here. She's not the kind to be working here. You know it.
Maybe she won't be long. I've asked Rancy to go away with me, Marshal. I've asked her to marry me. Does that surprise you?
A little bit, yeah.
It surprised me, too. But that's the way it is.
Rancy agree to it?
Not yet. But she will. And Buck Weber won't have a thing to say about it.
He won't, huh? I wouldn't count on that if I were you.
Many a child has been warned by his parents that if he digs too deep a hole in the flower bed, he's liable to fall through to China. Well, apparently this little tale had its origin in our American folklore many years ago. And it all started when Captain Wentworth bumped into the great Sam Patch in the middle of the China Seas. The captain said, "Why, Sam, how did you get here? I thought you were drowned near the Canadian border." Sam replied, "I didn't get here at all. I dove right through. In that there Niagara dive, I went so deep, I thought it was just a short to come up the other side. So I came out here in the China Seas. Now you just turn your ship around and I'll race you back to Boston. And if I don't beat you, then my name's not Sam Patch." Folklore belongs to every nation's legendary past, and I guess we Americans have our share of some tall tales.
Marshal.
Did you sleep all right?
Horrible.
Well, I hope you slept off some of those crazy notions you had last night.
Maybe.
All right, come on up. I got your belongings out here in the office, Buck. There's no charge against you. You're free to leave.
Glad to hear that, anyway.
Morning, Buck.
Stuff's there on the table, Buck.
Thanks. Did I get my gun back?
Chester?
I'll get it. There you are, Buck.
What are your plans?
Well, I reckon I better ride back out home and take care of the chores. Stocks used to being fed a couple hours earlier than this.
Not what I meant, Buck. What about Rancy?
I ain't rightly made up my mind yet, Marshal.
Leave her alone, will you? Give her a chance to use her own judgment.
Don't seem like she's got much of that. From the folks she's took up with the last few days.
It's her own business. She's a grown woman.
She's a married woman, too. She hadn't ought to be carrying on the way she is.
She hasn't done anything wrong.
I ain't saying she is. I got nothing against Rancy. Any woman's liable to get out of hand once in a while and start thinking fancy. I get her back out there in the farm for a week or two, she'll come to her senses.
Uh-huh.
It's just that Frisco that's causing all the trouble, trying to turn her head.
As far as I can see, all he's doing is treating her with a little respect.
It's a matter of opinion, Marshal. Well, if the law's got no more dealings with me, I'll be getting on.
No dealings, Buck. Not right now, anyway.
Good.
That fellow was born under a bad star, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, you may be right, Chester.
He lives mad and he's gonna die mad. You just wait.
That's about all I can do, Chester.
best time of day is at night. I always look forward to it.
Oh, why so, Doc?
Because after dark, this flea-bit town doesn't look so goddamn ugly. That's why.
I see.
If a man puts his mind to it, he can even imagine he's someplace else.
Seems to me if a man really wanted to, he could pull up stakes and be someplace else.
I don't know about that. A couple of years out on this blasted prairie leaves a man uncivilized for the rest of his life.
Doc, you were born uncivilized.
Oh, in medical school, I was regarded as a lad of culture and refinement.
Medical school? I always thought you had veterinary training.
I'd have been better off if I had. There's more animals around here than people. And that's not counting the people that are animals. Or just the same as, anyway.
Oh, they're improving a little bit year by year.
Oh, yeah, sure, they're improving. They're all for themselves, and the devil take the hindmost. That's what. Human nature doesn't change, Matt.
Well, that's what Chester thinks, since you started him reading Shakespeare.
Yeah, it won't do him any harm.
Come on, Doc. It's over in back of the Dodge House, I think.
Yeah, you say civilized, huh? Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah, improving. People shooting each other all the time, and bullets flying around.
Come on over this way.
Nobody dying in their beds. Oh, yes, they're civilized. Yeah.
Over here, Mr. Dillon! Somebody fired through the window in the Frisco Bates room. They must have been hiding out here in the dark somewhere.
All right, come on. We can get in through the back door.
Yes, sir.
Now, will you stand back, please? Stand away from the door, will you? All right, go on in, Doc. Chester.
Good. It's the first room, Mr. Dillon. Right here at the corner.
Uh-huh.
Quiet, man.
For Mr. Dillon.
Well, good Lord, Matt.
Yeah. All right, take over, will you, Doc? I got some dealings with him, man.
Nobody inside, Mr.
There's one way to find out. All right, hold it, Buck.
Why, Marshal, I thought I heard somebody knock.
You did. Been doing some shooting, huh?
No, I was just cleaning my gun. Sit down, Marshal. I'll clear this stuff off the table.
Never mind, Buck. Now let's have a look at that pistol.
What for?
There have been three shots fired here.
Oh. Yeah, I forgot there was a coyote bothering around this morning.
There were three shots fired in town tonight, back of the Dodge House.
That's so.
And a half a dozen people saw you running away from there right afterwards, Buck.
Why, I ain't been out of the house since dark.
Huh? And somebody's been riding one of your horses pretty hard, still leathered.
Don't say.
Way I figured, Buck, you waited outside Frisco's window till you saw the lamp lit and a shadow on the blind, then you fired through the window and ran for your horse. Is that about the way it was?
Yeah. Just about.
And you're under arrest for murder.
There won't nothing come of it, Marshal. When a man's wife's being bothered, there's an unwritten code.
There's no code about killing from ambush.
Well, you had it coming to him. The jury will see it that way. He was trying to get her to run away with him. Everybody in town knew about
it. They didn't know she'd made up her mind not to do it.
What do you mean?
She told Kitty tonight. And she went over to tell Frisco, but he wasn't in. The clerk of the Dodge House gave her the key to Frisco's room so she could go back and wait for him.
What are you saying, Marshal?
It was Rancy who lit that lamp tonight. It was her shadow on the blind.
Well, then I...
That's right, Buck. She's dead. And juries don't have much sympathy for men who kill women. You're gonna hang, Buck. Just as sure as shooting.
How well do you know the history of your Marine Corps? For example, did you know that the Marines were the first American troops to be decorated with the Fourragère, one of France's highest decorations of honor? In June 1918, the German army was in possession of Belleau Wood, a highly strategic point on the way to Paris, and unless the wood was secured by the Allies, Paris would soon fall. Two regiments of the American 2nd Division, the 5th and 6th Marines, were deployed to the south of Belleau Wood and ordered to drive the German troops back. Although greatly outnumbered, the Marines attacked again and again, and within 3 weeks, Belleau Wood was secured for the Allies. After Belleau Wood, the Marines continued their valiant fight, and to them, the grateful French government awarded the Croix de Guerre with two palms and a gold star, and, the first American troops to be so honored, the Fourragère. Thus, another page was added to the history of your United States Marine Corps. Gunsmoke, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Featured in the cast were Parley Bear as Chester, Howard McNear as Doc, and Georgia Ellis as Kitty. George Walsh speaking. Join us again next week for another specially transcribed story on...
That was Devil's Hindmost, with an original air date of the 6th of January, 1957. I believe the Vietnam War had begun, although I don't know if the U.S. had been heavily involved at that point. Yeah, there seems to be a lot of lathered horses here on the Grand Hour this morning. First in Johnny Stringer. And then again, the Devil's Hindmost. This is Arthur. Thanks for listening to the Grand Hour here this morning on 91.5 FM, Tufts Freeform Radio, and or WMFO.org. Rocky Erickson passed away a couple of Fridays ago. So in memorandum, I'm going to go ahead and play off of 13th Floor Elevator's Bull of the Woods album, a song that he's credited as. It's a traditional song, but he's got the writing credits on this one. Again, thanks for listening. Have a nice day.